You're listening to the Unveiling Mormonism podcast from PursueGod.org. Join us every Monday as we pull back the curtain on Mormon history, culture, and doctrine. Find more resources to continue the conversation at PursueGod.org/Mormonism. Okay, listeners, this is going to be a fun one because finally we have a Jack Mormon here to tell his story on Mormon stories. Paul, I asked you ahead of time if I could call you a Jack Mormon. You said that I could. Most Jack Mormons don't have a problem with that, right? So let's do this. Before you tell your story, we probably need to explain to all of the non-Mormon listeners, what the heck is a Jack Mormon? Start with that as you tell us your story.
All right. So I was born and raised in the church, had a very strong family. My family attended church weekly. We never missed mutual. We never missed family home evening.
Okay, hold on. Mutual is like youth group, right?
Youth group, correct.
Okay, mutual. I'm going to translate for you for our non-Mormon listeners. So mutual is like youth group. Family home evening is, we don't really have anything like that. It's kind of like small group, but just for your family, right?
Correct. So just to give you a little more detail of my family growing up, we had morning devotionals every morning. And they consisted of reading the Book of Mormon, singing a song, thought for the day, and kneeling down in a circle and having a family prayer, which was really a great thing growing up as a kid. I didn't mind it at all. I didn't really like when it was my turn to read the scriptures. I'd rather them just pass me by. But other than that, it was really good for the whole family to be a part of that and grow up under that roof.
Okay, so where are you in, how many kids, and where are you in the lineage? This might be helpful for our listeners to hear, as I'm sure some of our listeners are relating to this already.
So I come from a large family. I have three above, three below. I'm right in the middle.
Oh boy, well, we could have known where this was going to go then, the middle child, right? So you're the middle child, huge family, not that big for a Mormon family, but for many of our listeners, that sounds enormous. So what went wrong, Paul? I mean, there you are. You're like, you're being raised. You've got loving siblings above you, loving siblings below you, and your parents are all in. So what happened with you?
Yeah. There were questions I had. I have a very curious personality. You can tell me one thing and I'm going to go do the research and find it out for myself. And so I've had that personality my whole life, and I had questions when I was a kid. There were a lot of questions I asked that I couldn't really get answers for. My parents didn't have answers for. Other church members didn't have answers for. So that was where there was kind of a falling out for me, because I needed those answers.
Tell us a couple of the questions you were asking just real quick. I mean, we're not going to get into great detail on them, but again, our listeners probably have some questions as well, and I bet you some of those questions overlap.
Well, one of my questions was being sealed in the temple, and some of the things that actually went on in the temple, like baptism for the dead. That was one I couldn't understand, and I had deep questions, and my deep questions went a little like this: like if I were to die, let's say I did not get baptized in the Mormon church, and let's say I didn't have any family members in the Mormon church, but I died and I was not baptized in the Mormon church. And at that point, the Mormons believe that we still are going to be taught in the afterlife, and that we'll still have a choice, a decision to make. And at that point, what if I make that decision that I'm going to choose God and I've never been baptized? So what happens if somebody down here does not do that work for me? Where does that leave me? And that was a big one for me. I needed to know where I was going to be and what that meant, because at that point, I wanted to make sure that I wouldn't leave anybody behind. And there was an urgency to make sure that that didn't happen.
So you're buying into the Mormon idea of salvation, which for listeners who are newer to the podcast, basically it's a works-based salvation, right? It's we're saved after all by grace after all we can do. So Jesus, they talk about Jesus in the Mormon church, they talk about the cross, but it's all with like an asterisk because it doesn't mean the same thing that it means in the Christian church. And as young Paul is thinking this through, it's a burden, right? Because I think you're picking up at a young age that, wait a second, if it's dependent in any part on human agency, right? Either your agency or the agency of a Mormon getting baptized for you after you die, which is kind of a fundamental part of biblical or Mormon soteriology, which is a fancy word for salvation, their beliefs about salvation. Totally different understanding from a biblical understanding. Of course, you didn't know this at this point. All you know is Mormonism. So for you, though, you're starting to feel what I would call I don't know, I'm going to put some words in your mouth maybe, Paul, but you're starting to feel sort of the existential fear and dread that is just the natural result of works-based religion. Have I put my finger on it, or am I going too fast here, and are we going too quickly in the story?
Yeah, no, you nailed it. And, you know, there was a part of me that thought, man, how blessed am I to be born in to this religion to where I don't have to worry about that, where I am going to be at a certain level in my salvation because I was baptized. So let's say I'm that person again that was not born in the church and was not baptized. At that point, does he pay eternity for not being baptized? Can he not progress as we were told we would do because he was not baptized in the temple by somebody who just happened to be there that day and they call his name or don't call his name? So what happens to him at that point? What happens to him? That was my concern.
And so your parents couldn't answer it. What about the bishops? I mean, would a bishop have a satisfactory answer for you if you were to ask that question?
My understanding and never getting a real solid answer is that the progression would stop at that point. There was no chance for exaltation to occur.
So this is one of the then seeds of doubt for you. And are you still like high school age at this point, Paul, as you're starting to ask these questions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because how does that tie into you being a Jack Mormon? Because a Jack Mormon, for our listeners who don't know, is someone who's not really bought in. They're not really, you know, they're not wearing the garments. They're not going to the temple. I mean, you sound like someone who probably had more questions than a typical Jack Mormon. But are you saying that these questions just led you to not really buy into it at an early age?
Not fully. I was pretty into it. It wasn't until I did graduate high school and start getting ready for a Mormon mission and actually going through the temple to take out my own endowments to where I was kind of looking around thinking, what is this? What am I doing? So to give you a little bit of background on my mission, I really, really wanted to prepare for my mission, and I studied the Book of Mormon for hours and hours a day. And you know, I used to go on hikes and be just by myself and pray for hours. And I wanted that testimony. I wanted to know that the Mormon Church was true. I wanted to know the words in the Book of Mormon were true, and I wanted to know that I had that conviction for when I was to be a missionary. And I never received what I felt like I needed to receive. I never received that burning in the bosom or any confirmation that what I was doing was doing anything at all. And that's where my doubts came in.
So were you tempted at this point, Paul, to just go on your mission anyway?
Oh, of course. You know, in fact, I was told just go. And I couldn't. I just couldn't. And I know it was disappointing to my family. It was kind of strange because there were people at church that thought I had already left, and I keep showing up to church. So there were questions.
It's embarrassing for you. It's embarrassing for, maybe that's not the right word, but there's a certain sense of shame or at least disappointment on you and on your parents, probably on your family, that you didn't go, right? I mean, isn't this the experience for a Mormon growing up in the Mormon church?
Yeah, those were all the right words to use. That is absolutely correct. So
for you, did your older siblings all go on a mission?
So yes and no. So I have two older sisters that did not go on missions.
And it's not as big of a thing for women to go generally. It's not as big, right? Isn't it true? It's not as big of a disappointment if a woman doesn't go, a girl doesn't go on a mission as opposed to a guy, or am I getting that wrong?
No, that's correct. The age used to be higher for women. I believe it was 21. And, you know, as a church member, it was usually, I'm going to get struck down for this. It was usually the girls who couldn't get married, right?
It's just the truth. You won't get struck down for telling the truth, Paul. It's the truth, right?
So usually the girls or the ones who really felt like that's what they needed to do, they held off so that they could go on missions. So, yeah.
So girls wouldn't go till 21. So if you didn't get married by 21, there was more pressure on you to go on a mission, which is one of the reasons so many girls in Utah get married young. But the other thing then is boys would go what? At this point, boys would go at 19. Is that right? 18, 19?
It was 19 then. Yes. So all
so did those your older brother go on a mission?
He did go on a mission, and he had some health issues, so he returned and never went back out. And then I had two younger brothers that fulfilled full missions. And that's the extent of the missionaries in my family.
So how was it for you, Paul, showing up at your ward? Here you are, you're 19, and you're not off at the MTC. You're not going on your mission. What was that like for you? What did that do for your connection to the Mormon church?
You know, it's strange. In the Mormon church, people kind of know what's going on with other people just based off of, let's say, disciplinary actions or other incidences that take place in the church. So when you're sitting there on a Sunday in sacrament meeting and people are looking around knowing that you should be on your mission, but you're not, there's a lot of questions that are raised at that point. It's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Did you just duke it out though? Did you just stay? I mean, you were trying to be true to your convictions. You didn't have a conviction about the Book of Mormon, about Joseph Smith. You're still going to the ward with your parents, but you didn't have this enough of a conviction to go out on the mission field and talk to other people about it. Whereas, Paul, would you say it's true that a lot of young people, just like you were encouraged to go, would go anyway, in spite of their doubts and misgivings?
Oh, absolutely. And looking back, being that age and really understanding what the church was and what it had to offer, I can tell you, I didn't really know much about it. Even being at church every week and hearing the lessons, I really did not know much about it. So spending that time out in that mission field was one of the ways to gain that testimony that you could take throughout the rest of your life and in through eternity.
Yeah, that's my understanding. My son with all of his buddies, I mean, a lot of these kids weren't even really solid Mormons. I would say they're Jack Mormons, but a lot of them went on the mission anyway, and they come back with this new demeanor, with this new, I mean, certainly more respect from their ward. It's like their badge of honor. And for a lot of those kids then, that's really their sort of their coming of age, right? I mean, that is really where, like you said, a lot of these kids end up gaining their testimony is by going out there and telling people about the Mormon Jesus for a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. They had, I don't know if they still do this, but at the time they had young adult wards that were like college wards. So I moved to one of those so that nobody really knew who I was, because I didn't want to feel the shame. But as soon as you get there, you know, all the sisters in the ward start asking you where you served your mission, and that didn't work out too well for me either.
Okay, so here you are. So you're, I think a lot of people can relate to your story. So how and when did God start unveiling Mormonism for you? So here you are, you're at the singles ward now. What happens next in your story? Because it's still several years before you really meet the Jesus of the Bible, right?
Yeah, correct. Actually, I'm pretty recent to finding Jesus of the Bible. So I had I don't want to show my age, but it was a long, long period of time before I found Jesus of the Bible. One of the things, maybe progressing on to away from the singles ward to my family again, you know, growing up, the seal, the Mormon seal, that the temple seal was really the most important thing that could happen here on earth. And our family being sealed for time and eternity was something that was so special, and it was always talked about. It was something that we always worked really hard to keep our faith, our righteousness, so that we could keep that seal.
Yeah, let's pause here and explain that for a second, Paul. So you're saying, for the non-Mormon listeners, when you say your family being sealed, you're talking about your mom and your dad being sealed in the temple to each other for time and eternity. So it's these rituals that are sort of connected to masonry. We've talked about this in previous episodes, but so there are these rituals where your parents are sealed to each other, and then all of the seven kids that they had are sealed to them as well. That's what you're talking about?
That's correct. And not understanding what that was when I was younger, I just thought it was cool that we were all going to be together, and I was good with that. So my parents had a few rough years and decided to divorce each other. So according to the seal, they're still sealed. Even though they're divorced legally, they are still sealed, and we're still a family, an eternal family. So whatever happened here on earth was just what happened on earth. We're still sealed. My mom started dating and found a potential and ended up getting married and wanted to be sealed to him. So in order for her to be sealed to him, because a woman can only be sealed to one man, men can be sealed to multiple women, she and my dad had to do a temple cancellation. And with that cancellation, my dad, who is the patriarch of the family, now became basically the holder of the seal, from my understanding. And I've never got a solid answer on that as to what really happens. So my mom got married again and then got sealed to her new husband. So she is now part of his family, and she's no longer part of our family in the eternal family.
So for you, Paul, how old were you when this all happened? I mean, you're out of the house at this point. You're a young adult at this point, at least.
Yeah, I was probably, I think, 27, 28 at this time.
So for you and your siblings, are you like trying to talk your mom out of this? Are you trying to talk your dad into going back? Like, this is such an interesting dynamic for people who are listening, that Mormons, you know, divorce is hard enough on families on earth, here on earth, right? But for a Mormon family in your situation at that moment in time, you've got this other doctrine, which, by the way, isn't true. It's not biblical doctrine, but you didn't know that, right? So you've got this other doctrine in your head, these other ideas in your head, that you're like, this isn't just a bummer for here and now. This is a bummer for eternity. So what does that look like for you and your siblings? Did any of the siblings try to like talk your mom out of this?
No, actually, it was surprising. We'll go back to me being kind of a deep thinker and really asking questions. They were, and I was happy for her also, and they were happy for her. But when I really started breaking down, well, who am I sealed to for eternity now? Well, so we go with the patriarch, which is my father, who was not a very good person, who, I mean, I'm not his judge. I'm not his mediator. I don't know where he's going to be. So then that leaves us on our own. Are we still a family? It didn't make any sense. I can't make any sense out of it.
Yeah. Did any Mormon bishops have answers for you? Were there books you could read that could clear this up? Or is this just like this, just a continual, like, cloudy, we don't know. We just don't know.
So I had the conversation with my mom. We actually went for a walk and I had that conversation with her and the answer was, and it's not her fault. I think it's just, there isn't an answer. And the answer was, and I got told this answer a lot, for the Mormon listeners, they might know this answer. We don't know how it's going to work out, but we just have faith that it will. And I needed more than that. I still need more than that. I want answers. So then I look and I have some resentment towards my mom for breaking the seal, breaking apart our family, knowingly doing it and saying, hey, you're basically no longer my children. I have this new family over here. You're with your dad. And it separated the whole family. I don't know if many of them realize that that's what happened because they don't really dig into that side of things where, again, like I question things. That's what I did.
So for you, Paul, at this point, what does that do for your Mormon faith? Because I would imagine, I mean, I don't know, maybe I would imagine most Mormons would just not think that deeply about it. They'd be like, oh, whatever. But it's interesting because your story tells me that there was like something was pulling you to want to know the answers. I think that's the Holy Spirit, by the way. The Holy Spirit is drawing you to the truth. And that's what's happening inside of you. You probably didn't recognize that at the time. But I think a lot of Mormons would probably just be like, oh, whatever. Who cares? Whatever. Right? Because they don't really believe it anyway. I mean, if you didn't really fundamentally have some desire to believe it, then you just throw it all out the door, but you're still trying to make sense of it all, right? Isn't that a little bit of a sign of faith in Mormonism, at least a little bit of a leaning toward Mormonism?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though I stopped attending church for years, and my family members, they know that I was a lost cause. I've been a lost cause for forever. I stopped attending church. Even in discussions that I could hear people have and I would be a part of that would maybe talk negatively towards the Mormons and the Mormon church, I always stuck up for it. I have always stuck up for it because that's my family. My whole family's part of that. So it still meant something to me. I just didn't want to be a part of it. I didn't know what I wanted. And so I didn't go to church. I didn't go look for God. I didn't do anything. I was just living.
So at this point, Paul, you meet your wife, you start having kids, you have a family, but are you raising your kids in the Mormon church, or are you like, where are you at this point, at this stage in your family life with your own family?
Yeah, no, I did not raise my kids in the Mormon church. My wife came from a Mormon family also, and so she and I have a lot of the same views, and we have really deep conversations. So we did things like we got our children blessed. We figured that was something good to do. So we would show up to church, bless our kids, and go home and never go back, you know. And then we moved overseas for a few years. And when we moved back, my youngest child, Luke, started going to church with his aunt because my sister lives just around the corner from us. And she called and said, can I take him? And I said, absolutely. So after weeks and weeks and weeks, he came to me and said, hey, I want to get baptized. And I said, that's great. That's your choice. I didn't feel like I had that choice when I was a kid. That's something you just did. He actually wanted to get baptized. He wanted God. And and it was amazing. And I thought, this is great. And then I thought, am I being prompted to go back? Is my child strong with God? And is he going to pull us and the family back together and back into the church, which he kind of did? That for me lasted about 3 weeks, and then I couldn't do it anymore. I just, there was a lot of the core beliefs of the Mormon church. I had already learned enough to where I couldn't listen to it and I couldn't be a part of it. And I needed something more. So years later, we go to COVID. COVID hits, and I can see that the world is changing. And I received a blessing that I didn't think I would ever receive, because I was not part of anything and I wasn't praying to God. I wasn't being a part of anything. I was just living my life and just trying to leave everybody else alone and just do my thing. But this blessing came and it was so strong, I couldn't ignore it.
So Paul, you're at this point, you even dipped your toe back in the water in the Mormon church again for a few weeks. How did you come to meet the Jesus of the Bible? Because our listeners don't know this, but I know you, and I know the joy that you have in Jesus and the faith that you have that overflows. And our listeners want to hear what happened? What happened to this guy that had all these questions and was a Jack Mormon and just couldn't buy into it, and then met the real Jesus? How'd you do that? Where'd you meet him?
Yeah. Okay. So one afternoon I had a conversation with my brother-in-law who, had also left the church, and I thought he was crazy. I still do, just so you know. So I had this conversation with him, and he very arrogantly told me that Mormons do not believe in the God of the Bible. And I kind of listened to him, and then he left. And I pulled my wife aside and I said, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yes, they do. Because as Mormons, we believe in the Bible. And it's the same God. And a couple weeks later, we had a further discussion about it. And his answers were exactly what I needed. He told me, and to this day, I'll never forget it. He said, the God of the Bible is the God of all. He was there in the beginning, he'll be there in the end, and he'll be there forever. Mormons believe that the God is the God of this earth, which is not the God of all. It's the God of this earth, who was maybe a human at some point, earned a level of exaltation, and is now a God over this world. And it hit me so hard. It hit me so hard that I couldn't deny what he was saying. So I came in the house and I opened up the Bible and I started reading. I started praying. And I wanted more. So I needed a church. And we had tried Alpine Church a few times. And I thought, this is nonsense. There's a band. They have coffee.
This can't they're be church.
They're not it's wearing shirt and ties. It's not reverent. So going back my whole life, Christian music has always meant a lot to me. I can't even tell you why. I know why now, but back then I didn't know. But it's what I had when I was the Jack Mormon, when I was not attending church. It's what I had that kept me going, and I love it. And I go to Alpine Church and they're singing it, but for some reason I'm upset about it because it's not reverent and it's not what I'm used to. So my wife one day gets up and goes to church, and I didn't know where she was. Message her and she's not answering. And finally she calls me back. She says, I went to church. And she says, I think you need to give this a chance. And she says, I know it's not what we're used to. I know it's not even close to what we're used to. But she said, the message of Jesus is so strong. Paul, he's our savior. He is our savior. And we need to surrender to him. And I kind of understood what she was talking about, but I still had no clue. And so she came home and she was super excited about it. And I committed to go to church the next week with her. And I agreed to accept that it was not reverent as what I was used to. So
you pushed past it.
I pushed past it. And you know what? When I finally realized what was going on with the music and why it was the way it was, everyone standing, arms in the air, they're praising God, arms open for the big hug from Jesus. It's so amazing.
It's so much more intimate. It's so much more personal. But I could see how someone coming from Mormonism would say it doesn't feel reverent, because reverence is quiet and these and thous, praying in these and thous. But we've just seen so many people coming from a Mormon background saying, I never knew Jesus like this. I've never been able to experience Jesus like this.
Absolutely. I mean, from day one, the message, the sermons have all been about Jesus and what he did for us. And there's no denying. I thought I knew Jesus as a young one, you know, and in the Mormon church. I mean, his name is in the title. I just felt like I knew who he was. He was our Savior. That's what I knew. I didn't understand that through him, through me surrendering to him, through me being born again through him, that I would be saved and I can enter the kingdom of heaven. I didn't understand that. I understood that when I sinned, I would lose him and I would have to pray and repent, maybe even fast or talk to the bishop to get him back. I didn't realize he's been here the whole time. I didn't know the love he had for me.
You know, a lot of our listeners, I think, are probably struck by what you just said, because I think a lot of our listeners are in that place that you were a few years ago, dipping their toe. If they're listening to this podcast, they're dipping their toe in the water, but they're still trying to learn about the grace of Jesus. Because, you know, I think in Mormonism, is it true, Paul, that you were taught that grace is like a cop-out for Christians?
My understanding, and this is my understanding because I was a Jack Mormon, my understanding is that the grace was a blanket. Everybody got it. Mormons have it. Every person on earth gets that grace. It's just that's what Jesus did for us, and we all get it. And I think that's why there's a need to earn that next level of exaltation.
I see. Okay.
Now, going back again, I've lost a lot over the years, but that's my understanding of it.
Paul, for you, what were some of the big challenges for you on your journey out of Mormonism? It was a long journey. So obviously one of your challenges was learning what reverence really is, learning that a church service doesn't have to have these and thous and everybody dressed up to the nines to really be accepted by God. That was probably one thing. But what else for you was an adjustment for you coming into faith and becoming a Christian?
Yeah, it's the undeserving love. I did not deserve his love. I did not deserve his grace. I'm a sinner. I know it. I accept it. And I did not deserve it. I don't understand how he could have done that for all of us through faith. It was so hard to wrap my head around it. And that was it. It was so simple. It is so simple, but yet it's so hard to accept. And so that was my biggest challenge. My family, I would love for my whole family and friends and everybody, I'm so excited about Jesus. I want to let everybody know about Jesus. It's a harder discussion than what I realized. And so upon going through struggles with conversations about Jesus, I've relied on prayer heavily, and I've relied on guidance from Jesus. And I believe I am now a new creation through him, and he has given me so much guidance, and it's just been amazing. There's anger that was there. It's disappearing. there's a love for my family that I don't know if I've had in years. And it's changed everything for me. My relationship with my wife is amazing now. We both have Jesus. My relationship with my children has changed, and we just keep growing and getting stronger, and God is guiding us, and we love Him. We love Him so much.
Paul, what advice do you have for someone who's listening to this, to your story, and they're saying, man, I'm so close. I kind of feel what you're saying. Maybe how it was when you first came to church the first couple of times, you were like, no, I don't know. You still weren't convinced. What advice, what final words would you have for the person who's right on the edge and they just need a little nudge over the edge? What would you encourage them to do as they continue their pursuit of God and try to figure out who the Jesus of the Bible really is?
Look, if you're struggling right now and you're going to the Bible and you're reading it and you're referencing back to the Book of Mormon, or you're referencing to the Pearl of Great Price or the Doctrine and Covenants, I would say stop. Read those words. I've done enough studying to realize that there is a true contradiction between the books. And when you let go of one and you focus on the Bible, that truth comes out in the words. And I would say just focus and stay with those words. My whole understanding of Jesus was different. Once I understood that Jesus was 100% human and 100% God, it changed everything. And the only way you're going to know that that's who Jesus is through the Bible.
Hey listeners, Pastor Brian here. If you're enjoying our podcast, would you consider becoming a donor? Our goal is that these podcasts would reach the largest audience possible. So obviously it takes money to create good podcasts, but more than that, we want to make sure to market this to the whole nation and even to the world. That's where your donation comes in. So would you consider becoming a monthly donor? And to do it, just visit pursuegod.org/donate.